I guess I'll start off, Carrie. A string of coincidences led this addict to find a sponsor and to see that our acts of service can have far-reaching effects. The good we do. Sometimes I get the distinct feeling that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, that people are put in my life for a reason, and that coincidences are, well, not coincidences at all. Our actions have consequences we can't always see. We'll never know how our small efforts will reverberate through the world. Sometimes the smallest selfless act takes on a life of its own and makes a difference in the lives of countless other people. After winding up in a treatment center in my hometown, I went into a halfway house about 1,000 miles away. By the time I left the halfway house, I was a part of the local NA community and I had a job, so I stayed. When I was close to 4 years clean, I returned to the city I'd grown up in. I had recently lost my sponsor and knew that I needed a new one to help me through all the stresses and changes of relocation. As luck would have it, an NA convention was being held a few miles away 1 week after I relocated. I went to the convention hoping to meet new people and perhaps find a sponsor. I didn't know anyone there, felt very alone, and wasn't having a good time. But I stayed, remembering that my purpose at this convention was to find a new sponsor, even if I felt alienated. I'd been clean long enough to know that recovery sometimes requires doing things I don't like to do, such as getting to know new people, even if I feel too scared to talk to them. Sometimes I just need to do a little bit of footwork, face a little fear, and hope for the best. My first few years clean, it also showed me that those members who are committed to service in NA are often people who have strong recovery. So I went to the workshops on the 12 traditions. At the workshops on 12 traditions 10 through 12, the second speaker introduced himself as Jim. He had a lot of good things to say. He also seemed vaguely familiar. As I listened, it dawned on me that this might be the same person who had brought a meeting into the treatment center I'd been in. My memories of those first few days clean were fuzzy, so I wasn't sure if he was the guy from 4 years earlier. I'll pass it on to you now, Carrie.
My name's Carrie, I'm an addict. After the meeting, I approached him. This was intimidating. He had a lot of clean time and was already talking to a bunch of other people. I had asked him if he had brought a meeting into the treatment center I had been in about 4 years earlier. He said yes. And after 4 years, I had an opportunity to thank the nameless guy who first carried the message to me. I told him that he was the one who introduced me to Narcotics Anonymous. And the hospital institution meeting he'd spoken at had made a profound impression on me and helped me grasp the first step, and that I'd been living clean 1,000 miles away for the past 4 years. So I hardly knew him. I trusted that we'd been brought together for a reason, and I asked him to sponsor me. I'd be honored, he replied. He invited me to join him and some friends for dinner. The more we talked, the more confident I became in my choice of a sponsor. He sponsored me for the next 8 years and served as a model for me in many areas of my life. We remain close today. What were the odds of me running into this man during the first week home and out of several thousand recovering addicts in the region? How did I wind up in a workshop where he was the speaker? Why was the convention so conveniently held just a few days after I had relocated? In a flash, I saw the string of coincidences that led up to this moment. It occurred to me that we are never know the good we do. One act of service can make a profound difference, and one addict's good work can ripple outward in ways we cannot foresee. There's something magical about that for me that helps me to continue to believe in a power greater than myself. He didn't know I'd stay clean. He became a responsible member of society and then carried the message into hospitals and institutions myself. I was one of the many addicts he spoke to in the course of year-long weekly service commitment 4 years before. The full cycle of recovery, one addict helping a newcomer gets clean and the newcomer growing and himself starting to carry the message had taken place, all without his knowledge. Since that moment, I have never doubted that my efforts are worthwhile.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Jim and Carrie. And I'm gonna pass it over to Mark, the author of the story.
Hi, Mark, I'm Eric. It's good to be here, it's good to be clean. Can you all hear me? Yes, okay, good. Wow, thanks. Thanks, Jim, thanks, Carrie. Thanks to everyone that's spoken so far and, you know, for contributing your stories. It's, I've already cried a lot of tears today. I'm probably gonna cry a lot more. Right, so Jim, who just read, is like, he's the Jim from the story, right? So, you know, here we are some years later. So the story that took place in, I guess that was 1995, right? oh, I'm busy, sweetie. I'll get that later, thanks. Right, there's one of the great joys of my life. I'll get to her. So that story took place in 1995. I got clean in 91. And, you know, and so like, how amazing is it that Jim can be here, right? And Archer was saying earlier, like, this isn't my story, this is our story, right? Well, like, this isn't my story, it's Jim's story, right? Because he's in it, right? But it's also Carrie's story, because Carrie was Jim's sponsor back then. So I assume he said something like, yeah, go do that H&I meeting, or sure, why not? You know, I don't know what he said. You know, I do know Carrie. So I can imagine, I have this image in my head. But that's how this thing works, right? Like there's this guy even before Jim, then there's this guy even before Carrie. And then, yeah, it is our story, right? So that's just kind of amazing. That story, like, okay, I had 4 years thing when I wrote it. And it's not like a lot of other stories in the basic text, right? It's not like this big, you know, tearjerker. I don't know, it makes me cry. I don't know if it makes anyone else cry, but it's not like, wow, you overcame all this stuff, you know, like some of the stories we've heard. And I didn't think it was gonna make it into the text either, right? And it was just like, but I had been told that, like, yeah, we don't just want those stories. We want, like, you know, of like what it was like when you were using and then what happened and what it's like now. We want just some of those like good little stories that we tell in meetings and, you know, that we tell around when we're fellowshipping and just like some of those little amazing like stories, those little miracles. And I was like, yeah, I got one of those, right? So I'll throw it in there. I'm very proud that it's the shortest story in the basic text because I'm rarely brief. So it's like, wow, how did I do that? So it is one of those stories. It really does touch me. You know, it's like, it is amazing. And I kind of live that we don't know the good that we do. And it makes a huge difference in my life to just sort of like carry that along with this spirit of service thing, right? That we get here, that I got here. Because it can feel like it's, you know, like, are we making any difference? Does it matter, right? I don't know about you, but like I had, even before that, you know, where the story takes place, I had done H&I and just been like, you know, does this matter to anyone, right? Like, am I doing any good here? Sometimes I see these guys come out of this, you know, treatment center or detox or whatever, and they come around for a little bit and then, you know, I don't see them anymore. And like, not that many people stay clean. And, you know, so I would have those thoughts, you know, I tend to focus on the negative sometimes. I don't know if there's anyone here that's ever done that. I sponsored a guy that, you know, the first place I did H&I was this little detox. And I went in there, and when he got out, he found me at a meeting or he called me or something like that, but he wound up being my first sponsee. And I sponsored him, and I was like taking it really seriously. Like, you know, I got a huge responsibility here, you know, this addict is trusting me and all this stuff. And, you know, he relapsed and he, you know, he lost his job and his kids and his wife. I mean, it was like the whole country song, you know, just lost it all. Didn't get clean again. I don't know what happened to him. And I, you know, cause I was self-centered. It was all about me. I was like, I really failed here, you know, and, you know, there was a guy in Louisiana where I was living at that time that, he sponsored my roommate, and he used to say, yeah, you killed another one. And so that, right. And that, but it was sort of like, don't take yourself so fucking seriously. Right. You know, so like I heard that one somewhere in there. I was like, okay, you know, but you know, he brought a coworker with to a meeting. Right. And that guy, last time I saw him, he had stayed clean for 10 years. It was a long time ago now. So I don't know if he's still clean. Right. But it's like, wow. Yeah. We don't know. We just don't know, you know, and, the belief that I can do something good in the world is really important to me because I took from the world. And that's just kind of the relationship I had with the world. And I didn't understand that there might be a connection between the way that I was acting and the way that I was feeling before I got clean. You know, it was just like, it was, there was a lot of self-pity there, you know, there was a lot of pain in my life. And, you know, I haven't even touched on my drug use yet, you know, but there was a lot there. And this idea that like, maybe I was feeling so crappy because of the drugs I was doing, like that had to come along. And then maybe like even early in recovery, when things were still really painful, but I had lost the desire to use, which was like, that's kind of early recovery, right? Like it was learning how to live again for me. But this idea that I could like live my way into better thinking instead of having to like think my way into better living, right? I read that in the basic text. That was so powerful for me, you know, like, because I'm a thinker, right? Like I'm like, you know, I thought myself, I always had to be the smartest guy in the room, right? And it was like, and I think the only praise I received in childhood was like for being smart, right? And so I kind of took that to heart, you know, and like eventually I was like the smartest guy handcuffed in the back of a police car, right? Which is like, okay, you know, maybe that's not such a great thing to be. But you know, like when, where that eventually took me was this analysis, self-analysis of like, I'm using, it is ruining my life. My best attempt to stay clean, I moved like 1,000 miles away. I'm from Chicago. I moved to South Dakota. I took a job at a youth center. And I did not care anything about helping kids. What I wanted was like, a place in the middle of nowhere that required that I remain drug free, which that job did, that was away from everyone and everything that I knew because I was blaming all that stuff for my using. And so that's what I got. And, you know, I when I went out there, like my sole purpose in going out there was to get clean. And I took a bag with me, which has always stood out in my mind as part of the insanity that is addiction, right? It's just like, well, you're willing to move 1,000 miles and like go give up all this stuff. And, you know, it was just a temporary, you know, it was like a 3-month job. But I, eventually that bag was gone and like the fog started to lift and I went into a massive depression that I think I had been like self-medicating in a big way. But I started journaling. And so I started writing, you know, oh, I got this drug problem. I can never use drugs again successfully. I didn't know anything about recovery at that point. I had no introduction to NA or any other 12-step program. But I have these journals, right? That's like just me spinning around in circles of like all these self-analysis of how shitty everything was and how screwed up I was and my inabilities to sustain relationships and how antisocial some of my behavior had been and just like all this stuff. It was like a mini 4-step sort of, but only the really bad part. Of and like the really painful part without anything good coming out of it, you know. A couple weeks before I left there, I was like, well, you know, yeah, okay, I'm better off not using, but I can just have one. I'll just you know, have one drink, you know, because that wasn't so much my thing, you know. And I did, right? And then it just like went from there, of course, right? Because that doesn't work. But I didn't know that at the time. When, and so being the smartest guy in the room, you know, I was in college at that time, and I wound up being kicked out of college for things that I didn't remember doing. I had no memory of it. I was blacked out. And it was kind of humiliating, you know. It was like, it was very public. And the dean of students there had, you know, said, hey, you know, why don't you go talk to the guy that runs the college bookstore, because he's a recovering alcoholic, he's in AA. And I thought, well, okay, yeah, but the only reason I'm drinking this much is because I'm trying to solve my drug problem, and because I have all these other problems, and I'm depressed, and like, I thought I was crazy, you know, really, at the time. I didn't know what was wrong with me, and I mean, I knew it was the drugs, but I had stopped using them, and then, you know, but then the alcohol just really took off, and then I was like, well, I never had a problem with pills, and there was pills and the alcohol together, and it's like, it was just all like, can I, you know, how can I stay messed up all the time and not feel, go back to that place of just kind of oblivion and numbness, which, as painful as it was what I preferred, evidently, you know. I was just kind of trapped. And so yeah, the treatment center I wound up going to, you know, so I got kicked out of college, wound up making my way back to Chicago, and just sitting in I remember sitting in a Greyhound station, and like, just like, how did this happen? I finally told my folks, I told my dad what was going on. I said, you know, I got a drug problem. I'd been pretty good at hiding it. And so he asked me if I wanted to get help, which I had never had that occurred to me, right? It was just like, I could sit there and watch these commercials on TV of like, this is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. It's like a fried egg in a pan. Many of you remember this, right? And I was like, you know, and then I'd see these things of like treatment centers. Like, do you have a drug problem? Like, come to one of these places, you know, it's for people with drug problems, right? But I couldn't make these kinds of connections in my mind of like, oh, I am suffering here because of my drug use. I really want to stop. I can't stop. I keep failing. But the word addict did not fit in my mind. And this idea of treatment didn't fit in my mind. And, you know, but my dad, when I told him, he's like, well, do you want to get help? And I was like, yeah, you know. So I wound up in this treatment center, and that's where Jim came in, did the H&I meeting, right? So now you're up to like that little part of the story. But, you know, they also gave me a basic text in there, which was rare, right? I don't know how rare it still is, but it was rare to get a basic text and not just the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that book just it changed my life, because it was the first time, you know, like the first day I was there, they're like, go read the first, you know, 19 pages of this, which is basically up until step one, I think, and the basic text is where it went. And man, it just, it was like, these are my people. I wanted to meet these people. And then Jim was the first one of the people that I met. Thanks again, Jim. I don't know how many times I got to say that, but you know, hey, I got this whole life out of it, right? So, and then, you know, after a while, after I've been clean for a while, you know, by then I was in this halfway house. It's in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I didn't stay clean after that treatment center, or after Jim, by the way. I relapsed on some prescribed medication. I went to another treatment center, but I was clean like very, very shortly afterwards, you know. And so I wound up in this halfway house in Louisiana, and I started doing service, because that's like what everybody did, right? Like, the fellowship was pretty small then. So it was just like everybody did that. So I started doing it too, first at the group, you know, first just like helping clean up ashtrays, you know. It was ashtrays in a hospital cafeteria. So that tells you, that dates it a little bit, right? we were still smoking in hospital cafeterias. So I cleaned the ashtrays, and it kind of like, it gave me an excuse to hang out, really. I just wanted to be around other people, and I was really lonely, and I didn't know how to like, I didn't know how to express that. I just knew I felt safe when I was at the meetings. And so cleaning the ashtrays, like somebody asked me if I wanted to, and I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, it gave me an excuse to stay around. And at first it was just like, okay, I'm just going to be over here cleaning the ashtrays while you guys are hugging each other and laughing or, you know, talking about whatever. Because I was that newcomer that was like literally shaking, right? Like physically shaking when you came to hug me. And I went from, you know, doing that service into, I got a home group. I started doing group service, and then the public information, like the chairperson came up at area, and I was like, well, how can no one be doing this? This is really important. And I realized then, I was like, that, you know, I've been walking around the streets of Chicago trying to figure out, how do I stop using, and in a tremendous amount of pain. And I didn't know about this NA thing, right? I found out there was a meeting one block from my house, one block. And I didn't know it was there, right? And then I also made this connection that, like, you know, this book, right? Like, well, this is the sixth edition, right? But like a book a lot like that one, right? The Basic Text of NA. I got that in treatment and it changed my life, right? Like somebody made the effort. I don't know if it was Jim or not. I don't think it was. I don't know. Somebody made the effort to like not just do that H&I meeting, but somebody also did that extra bit of like, maybe you should give this to your clients, right? And that's what, you know, that public information piece was. It was, no, don't let that meeting, like that's a block away from the suffering addict, just sit there hidden, right? And you know, like get the books in the hands of the treatment centers, you know, contact those treatment centers and say, yeah, have you heard of this? You know, like, do you still think like we're only a bunch of people that can't stay clean? Because maybe that's what NA was here 10 years ago or something. Because that's not what we are now, you know. If we had a bad reputation, which I think in Baton Rouge at that time, it kind of had, you know, like oftentimes, you know, it starts with fits and starts. And NA in Louisiana, by the way, was started in 1976 by someone who was severely mentally ill, including schizophrenia. And when I first started taking medication, right? Cause like I took it for depression too. Early in my recovery, I was having like side effects and like, it was just like, and I was still depressed and all this stuff. And my sponsor said, well, go talk to Charlie. Charlie's taking everything, you know? And you know, he'll tell you how to deal with this stuff. And I was like, Charlie, how do I get out of bed? And Charlie was this guy that had started NA there. And then he taught me how to do that. He was like, oh, I got alarm clocks all over my room. Right? Like I got one there, one there, one there, you know? And Charlie, like, you know, God love him. You know, he's suffered a lot over the years, but he's helped so many people and he helped me. And I remember him just pacing, you know, some medication he was taking, pacing in the back of the meeting, right? Just like couldn't stop walking for a little while. But also just kept loving us and we kept loving him. And I'm really grateful for him. But yeah, so you know, I did this PI thing, right? And I was like, I'm gonna give away what was given to me, right? Like, I just don't want other people to suffer like I was suffering. And you know, and so like that spirit of service carried me to doing H&I, right? Like, and that's where like some of this stuff of just like, if I do these things, now H&I is great because like I can see these, you know, it's like somebody walks up to me and they say, thank you. They clap, right? They say, you really touched me or something like this. And that doesn't happen so much doing public relations work, just like mailing off like a bunch of, at the time it was like mailing off a bunch of meeting lists, right? Like, cause the web wasn't around yet. you know, so it was, it's a little more abstract. So it's harder to get that instant gratification thing that like we love, I love, right? And so H&I tends to get like a lot of love in the fellowship, and it's well-deserved. And obviously, you know, it's critical to my story and in being here today. But so I started doing that. And then, you know, because I was doing lots of service, I just, that's part of why, like, I started having this sense of value myself, right? I started feeling like I have some real value to give to the world. And this is it, right? It's like, I might feel like I don't have that value, but if I do these actions, I can live my way into better thinking, right? And that totally happened, right? Like I did these things, I acted as if, you know, I was worth it, right? Or like I could do this thing, right? I could go into an H&I meeting, right? Like my story could somehow help somebody, even though I just felt like it couldn't at that time when I first started doing it. And eventually I started believing it a little bit, you know, and like, today I believe it a lot, right? And it kept me involved in service. And then I started knowing that like the people that are doing service are the ones that are really grateful, you know, like, and those are the ones that I want to be around, you know, because I don't know if the best recovery is how I was thinking of it at the time, you know, and that seems like a bit much now, but I wanted to be around the grateful people. And that's why I like went to that workshop at the convention where I met Jim again. Right. Jim and I since then, like, you know, like I didn't know he was involved in World Service then. And like, I didn't know I would be later on. And, you know, when he, you know, semi-retired from World Service, I got to like be there, like right at the podium with him and like, you know, talk about this story again. And like, just, you know, that was kind of amazing. And so being the smartest guy in the room, right? I am a smart guy. And I Jim, I think, was in college at that time when I met him again and asked him to sponsor me. And I wanted to go back to school. I had gone back to college twice, dropped out twice after having panic attacks in my first couple years clean. And I had sort of gotten to this place where I was like, this is not for me. I can't do it. And that's okay, right? Like I'm clean. I got a life worth living. I got a lot of good friends. You know, my warehouse job is totally fine. And then, you know, but it kind of inspired me to see people, including Jim, that were like, yeah, you know, I'm going back to school. And like, you know, sometimes our paths aren't like linear, but we can still like overcome ourselves and do that stuff. And so I think Jim and I are each like 3 degrees later, right? So like we've got a lot of education, you know, between ourselves. And for me, like, you know, like I had to go deal with those panic attacks, right? I had to get some extra help. And I applied some of the same things that I learned here, right? It was like, okay, just be willing, participate in this group, you know, be willing to take suggestions, be open-minded. And so I was in this like panic group, right? And there was like the lady that couldn't step on an escalator, and the guy that, you know, could freak out, you know, his career tanked because he couldn't go on airplanes, and like, you know, and I'm there with them and I'm like, I can't step in a classroom, right? Like, and like, what's that about? And like all this stuff, you know, like, you know, my earliest memory is pretty traumatic, and it was, you know, it was at school, and, you know, I was a precocious young 2-year-old in public school. You know, so like, I don't know, it was probably attached to that. I don't really know. All I know is like, this is what was happening. I needed to deal with it. And I did, you know, and it was so uncomfortable. It was so like, oh my gosh, you know, like I wanted to run from those feelings, and just wanted to run away, literally. Right. But I learned some tools, right? And I was still going to meetings and I had all this emotional support from the meetings. I had some from that panic group too. But I really like, I leaned into the meetings. I had Jim there and like, I had other people, I had friends in recovery and they were like, yeah, you can do this totally, you know? So, you know, yeah, fast forward some years and like, I mean, well, first, like I went to my local community college in Chicago, one of the city colleges of Chicago. And then I was like, okay, I can do this. I transferred to my local university and I still felt like I don't belong here. I'm not like these other people. And then a classmate was like, you should be in the honors college with me, you know, with us, like, you're, you know, and I was like, what's that? Right. So I was like, okay. So I checked it out and, you know, so I graduated with honors. And then, you know, some years later, I was like kind of dissatisfied with work and with what I was doing. And I decided to go back to grad school. I wanted to go to grad school, but I didn't know what to do. And I kind of, what I wound up doing one day was I sat down and I made just this list of like things that I want in like a career in my life. And it was like the ability to serve, something around like books, right? And like literature you know, so today I'm a librarian, right? Pretty good mix there, right? I was an academic librarian at first for some years. So there was like some real scholarship, but also helping scholars. And that felt pretty good. I got another master's degree after my library degree. And today I'm a public librarian, which like I was really, you know, I was kind of scared about doing that, right? And I was like, I don't know about dealing with other people's kids and like, you know, what are all that, you know, I was just telling my son today about like the time like feces got thrown all over the bathroom in the public library and, you know, like less likely to happen with faculty and students. I'm sure it's happened somewhere, but so I didn't really want to do it. And I was like, you know what? After I started doing it, I was like, those are the things I want to do the most, right? Like, oh my gosh, it's amazing to see the kids come in, you know? It's amazing to make these kind of impacts and like to, you know, like when somebody's having a such a bad day that they want to, you know, that's what they want to do in the public library bathroom or they're overdosing in the bathroom. Yeah, I want to be there, you know, and it feels good to be there. And I approach recovery by really digging into this book, right? Because like, that's my thing, right? It's like study the literature. And I used to carry it with me everywhere. And then It Works How and Why was published and the Just for Today was published like shortly after I got clean. And then it Works came out. And then, you know, and so I'm carrying these things with me. And then like, now you can't carry everything with you. It's too much in print, but it's like, I have it all in my cell phone, right? And I'll see you later. I'm still busy. You know, like there's a lot in there. There's a lot in study, right? And it's not just in any literature, right? It's just like, there's a whole world of stuff, right? And I'm not just saying this because like I'm a librarian. This is how I've grown, right? Like the experience of others and open-mindedness to that experience has made things deeper and richer for me. Right, so I've been interrupted by each of my kids now, and I told you I'd get back to that. You know, the thing I'm most grateful for in my life today is not my education, is not my career. It's really not all of you. And it's really like, it's not my kids. You know, it's not my family. It is the capacity for joy. It's the capacity for love, right? I didn't have it. I did not have it. I remember standing around at my grandmother's funeral. She committed suicide because of, you know, depression, mental illness. And everyone there was like crying. And I didn't get it. Just didn't get it. Didn't get that whole like caring about other people thing. And I think it was there, you know, like deep down, because like I'm human too, right? But, you know, somewhere along the line, I lost the ability, if I ever had it even, to feel humanity, to feel human in that way. And, sorry. And you know where I read about the capacity to feel human was lost? Right here. You know? So that's real for me. That's visceral, right? Like I still feel it here. And, but correspondingly, right? Like the capacity for, like as painful as that was, my capacity for joy is on the other side, you know? And like the fact that I can get to, there's still plenty of self-centeredness in my life, right? It causes some unmanageability. Addiction rears its head in various ways. The fact that I don't have to stay stuck in that, that I can, that can transform for me, you know, that I know that like, I can start my day over anytime, right? And that like, I can be open to just like the joy, that like the love of my kids or loving my kids, right? Like it's an opportunity and that can transform my life. And it's not just them, you know, it's just compassion. It's for you all. I can, it's that spirit of service thing. You know, if I can do it from a place of love and not from a place of like, ah, this is just what I do. I, you know, I serve, you know, it's time for another committee meeting or whatever. Wow, that's, you know, it's just been such a transformative thing in my life. This morning, I woke up with just like a head full of anxiety and like just thinking about stuff at work. This was like one of the hardest weeks I've had at work ever, right? It started with some humiliation, some public humiliation, felt really shitty. Reflecting on that, and seeing how like, you know, sometimes being the smartest guy in the room, like if I want to be that, not like I am, but sometimes that can really, really be damaging, right? Like when I am not considering like, and sometimes I don't, right? Like, okay, your idea sucks. So I'm just gonna tell you, here's a better idea, right? Like that's not, right? Like that's not how it works. Right? Like that's not a good way to approach the workplace. And so, you know, I think what happened this week maybe is that there was some payback, right? I think I humiliated somebody at one point and there was some payback this week. And so like, and there might be more ahead too. And that's frightening, frankly, you know, like one of the things I know about myself today is that like, I'm human, but I'm also a primate, right? And like, I don't like being like humiliated in front of the larger group, right? But that's not like, there's something wrong with me because of that, right? So I don't, you know, so like I was feeling that way, right? Like, oh, I suck, you know? And so the pain of that for me, like having that different perspective on myself or the capacity to even get there, right? Allows me to change my perception. And I learned that here, that it's like, I can do that, right? I don't have to stay stuck in the negative stuff and the negative feelings. And I don't have to like go running to escape all the time in some, you know, substance or some behavior, that's going to make things worse, you know? I don't know. So it's been like a humbling week in some ways. And anyway, so I woke up with like just my head kind of thinking about the work stuff. And I went and I looked out the window and there was some awe, right? Like it snowed here and it's beautiful. And I was like, okay, you know, I can hold both of these things here. And in fact, like I can just sort of let the world in. I can let nature in, I can let my higher power in. It's really what that is, you know? That's kind of how it works for me today, you know? Sometimes I get stuck, you know? We all differ in rates of illness and degree of recovery, or degree of illness and rates of recovery, whatever. I can't really quote the basic text as much as I've read it. I can only paraphrase it, usually not well. But I have a lot of hard days. I do, you know, like my defects just flare up. I cause harm. I go back to that thinking that I'm less than thing. And so it's really important for me to be able to have some tools in the box to start my day over, you know? And to have a way to repair wrongs that I, you know, and even like recognize it. To have a way to not stay stuck in the bad feelings, you know, and not just spiral down into some depression that can get to be pretty debilitating, right? For me, like I'm grateful that it isn't usually, right? It's one of several disorders that like I've been diagnosed with, but you know, like they're not, they don't have to rule my life today, you know, like, and the support I've gotten here and the support I continue to get here, you know, it's, I always feel like, you know, the thing about addiction is like, there's nothing that can go on in my life that addiction can't make worse, right? And so like, no matter what's going on, that comes first for me, you know? I'm just, you know, I don't know, addiction, it can just take so much. And, you know, the pandemic is hard. It is hard. It's a hard time. A lot of us are, a lot of us are having a hard time. My kids are having a hard time. I'm having a hard time with my kids. I also suddenly have like the ability to go to a 7 a.m. meeting pretty much every day without leaving my house. And, you know, David's here, and David, thanks for being part of keeping that thing going. And this, like, what's been amazing to me lately is like, you know, when I did World Service, I go to the World Service conference, I come back and I just be like, wow, I just wish everyone could have this experience of like seeing all these people like from all over the world and all the gratitude and like, oh my gosh, this thing really does work everywhere. That happens at world conventions too, but I would get it at the conference and like, and now like, yeah, everyone's having that. And like in the early days of the pandemic, it was just like seeing this, like that thing happen for so many people, you know? And it's like, it's so amazing. And I don't know. I'm so grateful for it, you know? When the sixth edition came out, I'll just say this a little bit. When the story came out, I remember I was at work and I just sort of broke down, you know, my sponsor called me and he said, you know, your story is in the text. And I just sort of broke down. I had to walk outside. I was working in the Chicago Loop at the time. And I remember just sitting there and just bawling. And just kind of knowing that like, that's gonna do some good. It's gonna just like help people maybe all over the world. Like, you know, maybe, I don't know. But I know that like, I don't know, like taking those risks of like just doing the thing anyway, even if I think it's pointless, practicing the principles, even if I don't feel like that I need to. That thing, Like, I've been able to do that in other parts of my life. I've been able to do it professionally where, like, I started, you know, I got involved in public policy stuff and just doing the same kind of thing, like service to my profession. And like, I can make a difference in the world. And maybe I can make a difference for other people. And I wound up like, I wound up influencing this federal program some years ago after talking to some folks at the FCC and meeting with a congressman. And I was like, holy shit, I can't believe that I'm here and that this is part of my life, you know, from where I came from. And then like this legislation got approved and it was like, you know, $3.5 billion, right? And I was like a piece of this, right? Like it wasn't my idea or anything like that, right? But I felt a part of it. I was like, wow, this is gonna make a real difference in people's lives. And it was humbling and it was awesome. And I was like, it's that thing I wrote about in the story, right? It's that good we do thing. And like, you just do your part, you don't know. And then a couple of years later, right? Like I found out that like, because of the way it was implemented, like none of the money was being spent, right? And I was like, oh, it was all for naught, right? Like, what the fuck, right? And so it was like this high, and like, oh, this is amazing. And then like somehow like that was all my fault, right? Like I should have done something else, right? So this morning I checked my email and I found like, there's now a proposal to expand that, right? To like over $7 billion. So we'll see if that happens. It's still like in committee and, you know, but it just like crossed a hurdle. And so I was reflecting on that today. It was like, yeah, sometimes I do stuff and then I think it's working. And I like, yeah. And then sometimes I look and I'm like, that didn't work, right? But I can't always I just can't see where it goes, you know, and none of us can. And what's so amazing about NA is that we just keep doing this thing, you know, and of that idea that someone did this for us, so we're gonna do it for someone else. And it can save lives, and it does save lives. And like being able to incorporate that into like the way I live my life brings meaning every day, you know? And I wouldn't even be alive, you know? I would have died young. I really would have. That's the road I was on. People told me I was on that road. And at first I thought that was a really cool thing when I was 16 and I heard some older guys say that I was going to be dead by the time I was 21. I just thought that was the greatest fucking thing. I was really cool. And when I was 18 and I couldn't stop using and I thought I'm going to be dead by 21. It was terrifying. And I'm so grateful I didn't. So grateful I didn't. And so much love in my life. So much good stuff. So many good days. So many great days. So, you know, if you're new, or if you're doing service and you're new to that, or, you know, wherever you're at, just, you know, keep doing it. Keep living your way into better thinking. If your thinking's not good, it's all right. You know, it can change. If today's not good, look out the window. It may change. That's all I got. I'm really good, really, really grateful to be here. And thanks for the opportunity, Francis and Wade, for putting this together. And Jim and Carrie again. Thanks for my life.